According to reports, the White House plans to start a push for comprehensive immigration reform this month. This hour, conversations with immigrants who've put down roots here in Iowa. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today we'll hear stories of leaving one's home country to settle in our state. What brought them here? What challenges did they face moving to Iowa from another country? What is it like to live and work to put down roots in Iowa's communities? Did you immigrate to Iowa from abroad? Tell us your story this hour. We get started right after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. According to reports, the White House plans to push for comprehensive immigration reform this month. And, of course, that's been a hotly debated topic for many years, as also in this last campaign season. That's prompted us to spend this hour with immigrants who've come to Iowa, who've already put down roots here in Iowa, and also some of the people who concern themselves with immigrant areas of concern. We're going to hear stories of leaving the home country to spend time in our state, to put down roots here, the challenges they faced moving to Iowa, what it's like to live and work, to put down new roots in Iowa's communities. And perhaps you are an immigrant to Iowa from another country. We'd like to have you tell us your story this hour, the biggest challenges you faced, what you like best about your adopted homeland here in Iowa, what you left and what you found when you came here that gave you perhaps joy or concern. 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. And we've invited a number of guests here to talk about immigrant issues. Joining us, first of all, Irund Awan. He is a Congolese-American man who has been in the United States since 1999. He now lives in Coralville and is in our Iowa City studio. Irund, welcome. Irund, welcome.
Oh, thank you for having us here.
And you are, we've invited you on also to talk about, let's talk initially about a group that you are a leader of and a founding member of, something called the Immigrant Voices Project. Tell us, what is the project? How did it get started?
Immigrant Voices started about a year ago. One year ago, January last year. And it was mainly a group of immigrants, Latinos, Africans, Sudanese, and a religious organization, unions. They got together and tried to find out why, meaning what's going on with the immigrant community here, the problem they face, how is life for them. So we decided to conduct a survey, and we interviewed about 150 immigrants from about 17 different countries. And we noticed the survey was mainly about finding out their lives here. How do they like? Is everything going well for them?
Mm-hmm.
And we noticed that a lot of them had problems with law enforcement. They had issues with housing, finding affordable housing, good jobs, paying jobs, and healthcare, transportation. And mainly the law enforcement was a big problem.
Communication, the relationship with law enforcement you found in the state to be also an area of concern.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And from there, we start holding meetings weekly and find out how we can come up with a solution. How can we somehow have a one-on-one with the law enforcement, a good relationship with them, because that would make the community even safer. Mm-hmm. Immigrants come here because they love this area. Mm-hmm. It's safe. It's good. Good education. It's good to raise a family. But nothing is perfect. And we would like to make it better. And we have started a conversation with the law enforcement. mm-hmm. which is getting will get better.
Okay, let's talk about that in a moment. But tell us, Irund, a little bit about your background. What brings you from the Congo to the United States, and in particular, Iowa? How did you arrive on our shores, so to speak?
I came in 1999, as you said. I was in Indiana State University, which is also, Terre Haute is like just like Iowa City. There's a river that divides the city. First of all, I didn't like the program I was in there. And when you're told that you cannot go across the river because the way you look, that can be frightening.
You were told that in Indiana?
In Indiana, mm-hmm. yes. So then I had a friend that knew Iowa and brought me here to visit for about a week. And I visited campus. I talked to a few students. And then I went back to Indiana. I made my decision that I liked Iowa. I think it's way open-minded than a tour at Indiana. So that's how I ended up in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have family with you?
No, not here. Not here.
Okay. You have them in Africa?
In Africa. Well, in Indiana, I have a brother and sister. Mm-hmm. The rest are in Africa. Yes.
Okay. Also joining us, who is a member of the Immigrant Voices Project, Fanai Galicia. I hope I got your name correct. Fanai, welcome to our program.
Thank you for inviting me.
You are originally from Mexico. When did you come to Iowa?
I came to Iowa since 1999.
Mm-hmm. And what prompted you to leave Mexico? Was it something pushing you out, would you say, or something drawing you to the United States?
Actually, I got a family here already, like cousins, and they told me it was nice over here. And the economy in Mexico is not so good, but the people here, it was nice. And then so that's mm-hmm. what it brought to me.
Irund mentioned a number of the common concerns that immigrants have here. Of the concerns that he just listed, what resonates with you most as far as something that you would like to see improved for immigrants in the state?
Okay, one of the limits I got when I got here when I just arrived, it was the communication, the language. I'm originally a Spanish speaker, mm-hmm. and that was my limit at the first thing. And it was not many places where we could learn English. And that's one of the things we are reunited on the IVP project so we can improve more classes, English classes for our community. And another one is like a relationship with the police, I'm sorry. And the better roads. Some of the people, as he say on the surveys, they have problems with transportation. Sometimes they spend many hours waiting just for one bus.
Okay. You and Irund both mentioned communication with law enforcement. Let's go a little bit deeper into that. What specific problems do you see that immigrants have in the relationships with local law enforcement? Irund.
For instance, I want to be stopped for a traffic violation that I committed, not because the way I look.
Mm-hmm. And you think you're being profiled?
There are cases. Pointing finger.
But I'm just asking for what evidence you have that happens.
For instance, we have a member of us that was stopped just because of stickers and their license, a plate, a sticker that was not put on top of the one that was expired. Mm-hmm. And she had her kids in a car. And since there was a language barrier between her and the officer, she had to wait for about 20 or 30 minutes. And when the translator comes, it comes with another two or three squad. And of course, that's and she's like a few feet from her home, and the kids are threatened because they see more police, and they ask, "Oh, mom, why are we having all these police with us?" Mm-hmm. So There's no need for that.
So what is your group doing, the Immigrant Voices Project, reaching out on this front to change? What is the dialogue you want to have, and how do you want to change things?
Well, for instance, in that case, that was a translation problem. We want to have a mechanism in which there's something faster than waiting, having somebody wait for 30 minutes before they're, you know, letting go, and something that works better.
Okay.
We have had people from, for instance, we have asked, we had somebody that came and talked to us about a police academy. How are they trained? We want to know those. Those are some of the questions we asked the police chief. And how are your guys trained as far as, you know, to deal with the immigrant mm-hmm. community here? Maybe you could have more, you know, people within your department that speak different language, or how can we make it better? We don't mm-hmm. have
and
the right
And you're answer. Finding people in local law enforcement willing to hear your concerns, to
yes.
talk with you.
Yes.
So
yes.
You see some hope there for change.
We have opened, yes, a conversation with them, and we hope to move on that front and have a positive result from that. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Talking about immigrant concerns, immigrants in Iowa, a large part of our program today on River to River. If you immigrated to Iowa from another country, we'd like to hear about the challenges you faced, what you like, what drew you to our country and to Iowa, and also the experiences that you've been having that you think might illustrate larger things that need to be looked at and addressed. 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Also joining us, Father Rudolph Juarez in our Iowa City studio. He's we have one of a couple of native Iowans we have in our group today. Father Rudolph Juarez concerns himself with many immigrant issues as pastor of St. Patrick's Church for the past 8 years in Iowa City. Father Juarez, welcome.
Well, thank you.
You've been sitting here listening to some of the concerns, the initiation of this Immigrant Voices Project. You were also one who helped to found this Voices Project. What do you have to add to the description that we've been given here and the goals of the group?
Well, one of the things that we wanted to do with the Immigrant Voices Project was to be able to find out exactly what the different concerns within the community were. And the best way to do this, we felt, was to ask directly the community which was most affected. And so we decided that we needed to do some evaluation, some way of ferreting out those kinds of concerns. And so developing the leadership of immigrants themselves so that they can speak for themselves and so that they can organize themselves was a high priority. And so what we did was we put together a survey to ask directly questions concerning the quality of life here in the Coralville, Iowa City area. And so we put this together and heard from about 100, over 150 surveys back. And so, you know, before, how would I say this? Some of the results that we got back were reflections that were very positive, because Iowa was a good place to live. So it wasn't all negative that you know, that things are bad here. No,
people generally feel safe here.
I think it's a good place
for families.
Exactly, and so having had the opportunity of organizing folks and getting people together to talk about some of the concerns, we decided that we wanted to share these with law enforcement and with civil authorities so that they would be able to hear directly from people who are most affected what their concerns and what they were concerned about.
Mm-hmm. Your involvement with the immigrant community in the Iowa City, Coralville area and in Iowa precedes this this survey by many years, but I wonder if in this survey results you found anything surprising, something that you learned new that is that was on your radar that wasn't before.
Well, I think I don't know how new it was. I generally have some ideas as to what you think is going on, but to have some of those validated really was helpful, and to have them come directly from the people who were most directly affected, that's empowering, not only for the people who are directly affected, but for those who would be advocates and those who would work with this particular community. So that I felt was really important, because oftentimes when you exercise leadership in within the community, just like our state representatives, just like our national elected officials, you can do a lot of advocacy. You can say, well, this is what I think we need, but that may not necessarily be the case. So you have to go to the people directly who are affected and have them say. And then not only that, but to do the construction of leadership skills within that segment of the community, so that people become empowered and are able to lend a voice to their own concerns.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We're talking specifically this half hour. We're talking about immigrant with immigrants and about immigrant concerns this hour on River to River. The Immigrant Voices Project, our focus for this first half hour. And I believe joining us by phone is another founding member of the Immigrant Voices Project. Is it Bakit Bakit?
Yes, sir.
Did I correctly pronounce your name, sir?
Yes, this is Bakit, yes.
Okay, Bakit, you are a Sudanese-American, I understand? Former president of the Iowa City Sudanese American Community Association. And what is for you first and foremost the goal of the project that you helped found, the Immigrant Voices Project, from your perspective?
The most important thing I think here is that we want our voice to be heard. We want the immigrant to be visible and their concern will be known to the whole community. I think this is the first step to go forward from here. Mm-hmm. And as Sudanese, we are here about a couple of hundreds here. Sudanese, they came to Iowa mainly as refugees. And you can imagine how people who came here who want to start their life from scratch in a new culture, a new language, and a new environment, what difficulties they have. And I can give you an example that many of the Sudanese here are well-educated. They have certificates. They are lawyers, engineers, technicians, nurses, doctors. But because the certificates from home doesn't translate into an American equivalent here, they have to go to accept low wages jobs. A good example, I think, is our president now, the president of Sudanese community, Dr. Muhammad Nasr, is a kidney transplant surgeon, but today he is working as a security guard. And so the other option for Sudanese is to start school again, and here in Iowa. And if you are familiar, or anyone who is familiar with Kirkwood College or the University of Iowa, you will be surprised to see the enormous number of the Sudanese students in the student population in these institutions. And actually, you can see parents, grandparents, and their kids sometimes in the same class. And I think it's good for the community to know more about the immigrant segment of the community, and this will be for the betterment of the whole community in Iowa City.
Bakit, you talked about getting a job and having your degrees recognized. Refugees from Sudan fleeing the horrible civil war in Sudan,
yes,
and coming to Iowa here. I wonder the cultural hurdles, the cultural challenges that you faced coming here as Sudanese refugees to Iowa. What have you had? What things here are culturally a challenge for someone from you? And I don't know whether you are a Christian or a Muslim.
Yeah, I'm Muslim, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very, you know, I can see there is a very big gap between the two cultures, and but the Sudanese, I think they can their experience that they can adapt to the new culture, they can accept what doesn't conflict with their tradition, their religion, and they can tolerate other things which they cannot accept. It's actually a very enriching experience, not at all something negative.
Okay, Bakit, thank you for sharing your perspective and joining us on River to River.
Thank you very much.
And let's go to Urbandale across west to the state from that call in Iowa City. Let's go to Urbandale. I believe it's Goanar?
Yes, Goanar.
Goanar, thank you for joining our program. You are also from Sudan?
Yes, South Sudan now.
Uh-huh. Tell us about your experience.
I must say that I listened to the speakers. Actually, the first speaker who mentioned that he came from Indiana University. That was where we were in Bloomington, Indiana, for the first 3 years of our stay in United States. My family and I went there, and actually my wife registered at Indiana University and completed her school in Upper Iowa here in Des Moines.
Mm-hmm. We're coming up on a break. I wonder if you can tell us what experience or difficulty you've faced that you'd like to share so that we can learn from it.
Mainly the difficulty are the issues of language for some people. Fortunately for me personally, my certificates were not in Sudan because of the first war. I was in the south, and when I came here, I had British English. They say I had a British accent.
Yeah.
And then I had no real issue with the language, but still my kids tell me I had an accent. So,
mm-hmm. Do you see yourself, before we have to say goodbye and go to a break, do you see yourself being here long-term with your family?
Yes, we both of us are citizens now. We have three kids, and actually one of our daughters is in University of Iowa. But also you need to realize that the Iowa State was where our rebel leader was, who became the vice president but died in 27 days, Dr. John Garang. Mm. So we find ourselves really comfortable here, except the issues with some people whom we try to help with the law enforcement. The problem is that some of the law enforcement people do not recognize the documents that are given to, like, green card, for example.
Goanar, we have to take a short break. Thank you for sharing your immigrant voice with us. We appreciate the call from Urbandale.
Thank you.
And when we come back, we continue talking with immigrants in Iowa, also about immigrant concerns. Perhaps you have a story of your immigration from another country to Iowa. Tell us, 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in just a few minutes. This is Iowa Public Radio. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Chuck Hagel, John Kerry, John Brennan, the first picks for President Obama's cabinet in his second term. Next time, tomorrow on River to River, we'll discuss these possible nominees to play their roles in the second Obama term. Also, we'll be talking about whether the president can raise the debt ceiling on his own, circumventing congressional debate. And we'll talk about that tomorrow. Politics Wednesday tomorrow on our program. We hope you'll join us. The White House plans to start, according to reports, a push for comprehensive immigration reform this month, and that's prompted us to talk with immigrants here in Iowa and about immigrants' concerns here in Iowa. Tell us your story if you or your family immigrated from another country to live here in Iowa, your challenges, your hopes, your dreams, your concerns. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. We have a leader and a founding member of the Immigrant Voices Project, a newly formed group in the Iowa City, Coralville area with us, Irund Awan. He's a Congolese American. He's with us in our Iowa City studio, as is Fanai Galicia from Mexico originally, also a member of the Immigrant Voices Project, and Father Rudolph Juarez, a pastor at St. Patrick's Church, native Iowan, who is involved with immigrant issues as part of this Immigrant Voices Project we've been talking about this first half hour. Also joining us now in our Des Moines studio, Sandra Sanchez. She is the program director of the American Friends Service Committee. It's a little different title, Immigrants Voice Program. Are you in our Des Moines studio or by phone, Sandra?
By phone.
By phone. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And tell us a little bit about your background.
Okay, I am originally from Mexico, and I emigrated to Des Moines since 1991.
Okay. And I understand that you reach out via radio to reach the community in Des Moines and other places, don't you?
Yes, that's correct. I reach the Latino community in Spanish in a weekly radio show to Radio La Reina every Thursday from 11:30 to 12.
If you could name three issues that are most concerned on among Latinos on your radio program, what would they be?
Right now, it will be the denying driver's license to dreamers who have obtained deferred action. The second one will be the situation that has to do with immigration reform, that we wanted to bring it back to the forefront of the federal Congress. And the third one will be the cuts on education in Iowa for children that are kindergarten to K-12.
Okay, K-12. Let's talk a little bit about immigration reform with you. Do you see this as a point? We've debated it for many years. It's been a hot-button issue politically across the country, immigration reform, immigration reform. Do you see us now at a different point here at the beginning of 2013 than we have been in the past, Sandra?
I think that the result of the elections spoke very clearly about that. I think that Congress has been several steps behind with what the United States voters have been saying for years. We want immigration reform, so they need to catch up with us.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps I can turn to you, Father Juarez, in Iowa City, to tell us, from an immigrant perspective, what is the problem not having this comprehensive immigration reform? First of all, from the immigrant perspective, and I'd like to find out for everyday Iowans, why do native Iowans such as yourself need to be concerned about this?
Well, I think the reason why we need to be concerned is because we need to know who's in the country, for one. And so when you have an ID and a valid ID, which is recognized by enforcement, law enforcement, and city and public officials, that's always a great advantage, because we want to know who's here in the country and here in Iowa. That's one thing. The other thing is the accessibility that people need and have to have for just transacting everyday normal business, as simple as going to a pharmacy and having a subscription filled and being able to provide an ID which would be recognized and validated by the person who would be administering this prescription, for instance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and how is that complicated for an immigrant right now?
Well,
in that simple act of getting some medication,
you can't do it. You have to have ID unless you have already established a relationship with a particular pharmacy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sandra Sanchez, you belong to something called the Latino Forum in Des Moines, an informal group there. I wonder if you could describe that.
Okay, this group was formed in the year 2011, towards the end of 2011, as part of the Crossroads initiative for the Central Iowa, where a number of high-ranking officials and volunteers from the city want to reinvigorate this section of the city in order to develop economic development opportunities, to revitalize the zone, and so forth. And they found out that more than 25% of the community living there are Latinos, and for the most part, they are immigrants. So they needed to hear from the community and from us what is happening, how they could do a good job, because in the past they have been efforts to integrate members of the immigrant and Latino community, and they have failed. And the reason in the past they have failed, in my opinion, is because they didn't have us at the table. So this time, Tom Urban, the person who was the convener for the Latinos to be part of this project, invited us to have a listening session, and I have to applaud that effort, because now we are working on different projects, but the main project that we are working towards right now will be to develop a Latino community center in Central Iowa.
Mm-hmm. I understand that in the Des Moines area, gangs have posed a threat to the immigrant population. Can you describe how?
The problem is that we have had a number of people moving from states like Chicago, Illinois, like California, and other places where gang activity has been high for decades. Okay, and the Des Moines area and other parts of the state of Iowa had no idea how to deal with this kind of situation. So what is happening is that these children, for the most part, have no hopes, because they are not doing well at school, because they are not being provided with the necessary resources to be successful at school. Once they feel hopeless, they join gangs. So my criticism to the government is that they keep cutting funds for schools instead of expanding funding to keep these youngsters doing sports or other after-school activities so that they will not be part of those gangs.
Okay. Sandra Sanchez, please stay on the line. I want to invite another guest on here. We have a number of phone calls to get to as well. But first of all, Barb Dinnan is with us. Barb is a pastor at the Las Americas Trinity United Church in Des Moines. Barb, you are in our Des Moines studio.
I am. One correction, that's the United Methodist Church.
Okay, Trinity United Methodist Church.
Correct,
in Des Moines.
That's it. You
Very
got it.
Yep. Excuse me on that.
No, no problem.
You are also the chair of the Latino Center Committee. You've been listening to our conversation. What hasn't been brought out, since we're getting a smattering of the concerns, the challenges that face the immigrant community here? What are you working on in particular?
Well, in this role, my congregation is Latinos, all first generation, and their children, and so we see all of the issues that Sandra's mentioned. She's named them very well, and yet we see that as you look across the metro area, we have all kinds of Latinos, and so to think of them as just one particular type is really misleading. And so we have people from all different countries, all different cultures, all different kinds of jobs, all different language abilities. And so one of the core issues that came out of the Latino Forum is the need for a Latino center that would be a place where all of these variety of folks from all kinds of countries could join together and shape an identity for themselves, to realize how diverse they are and how rich they are in culture. And at the same time, Sandra mentioned it also, there is it is very difficult for the greater Des Moines business community to reach or connect with the Latino community, because there is no centralized place. There is no way of doing it. I received calls from various companies through the area saying, how do I market my job that's bilingual to the Latino community? It takes different skills. It takes different interests. You're talking to a different community. And so our the needs for Latino community centered from the Latino perspective are huge, but they're equally important for the greater Des Moines community to have a place to build a bridge where we can begin to understand that we are all citizens of Des Moines, the state mm-hmm. of Iowa. We're all here. Mm-hmm. And so we all need to work together.
Progress here benefits not only the immigrants, but also Iowans who've been here for generations.
Completely. Yep.
Can you describe how?
We all live together. If we don't know each other, we set up perceptions that are not always true. There is a need to build a community of all the diverse folks that live here. I mean, I particularly work with the Latino community. In my neighborhood, I could say the same thing for the Asian community, the African arrivals, those other countries, the new refugees. And so if you look at the numbers, and I don't do statistics like Sandra does, but if you look at the numbers in the Des Moines Public School, it is incredible the number of students that are not Caucasian, that are of diverse ethnic minorities. Mm-hmm. And that's who we are. So let's...
And in some respects, we have to catch up to that fact.
Yes.
Is what a lot of what the concerns I'm hearing
right.
This hour. Barb Dinnan, please stand by. I want to make sure we get to some callers this hour before our hour ends because we've generated evidently some discussion here. Joe is in Humboldt. Joe, how are you?
Good. Let me turn my radio down here.
Okay. Thank you for doing that. What's your connection here?
I married a woman from Central America, and we founded a group called the Humboldt Diversity Appreciation Team back in the 90s when immigration was really being promoted as a way to help the workforce in Iowa. And of course, we've seen a lot of changes since then. One of the things that always concerns me about immigration reform is I think that people don't really understand how much immigration reform is really needed. If you marry someone from outside the country, there's this sort of belief that, well, then all of their family gets to come to the United States as legal aliens, which is true, but it's very, very restrictive and very dependent on government funding, which just isn't there in the immigration service. And I think you could probably talk to Ms. Sanchez or anybody who's involved with the Latino community. You're looking at, you know, decade-long waits to get your relatives into the United States, and that's legally. And so that's the type of reform that I'd like to see when we're talking about immigration reform for the United States, rather than, you know, unfortunately, my new congressional representative is out there with another one of his, I don't know where he gets these, what if you would even call it an idea, on what he's talking about immigration reform in the United States. And it's sad to see that, but at the same time, I think that his actions are sort of galvanizing the immigration community in Iowa. And, I'm looking at trying to get the Humboldt Diversity Appreciation Team much more active and much more proactive now because we see this type of activity by our congressional representatives. We just need to inform people. And I know I'm talking a little bit too much here, but If you're in a country like Costa Rica and you want to come to the United States, people need to realize it costs you to go to the U.S. Embassy. It's about a $200 charge, and I don't know, it'd be interesting to find out from your other guests what it is in other countries, just to apply for a visa. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're turned down, you lose that money. And you're talking about people who, I think the per capita GDP in Costa Rica is about $5,000 compared to about $40,000 in the United States. So that's like a $2,000 fee just to come visit the United States. You go to our embassy, okay, and they just turn you down.
Okay, Joe, thank you. A lot of details here. We have broad brushstrokes at this point. Thank you, Joe, for calling from Humboldt. Joe, referring to, I believe, Congressman Steve King, a Republican in Iowa's new 4th district in the northwest part of the state, began the 113th Congress by proposing some federal legislation to halt what are sometimes called immigrant anchor babies. This is a bill introduced last week, the Birthright Citizen Act of 2013. And I know people who are energized working for immigrants might object to anchor babies. I don't know the other title that is used. Father Rudolph Juarez, your reaction to the introduction of that bill?
Well, it's been a long time since I've been called to do an exorcism. This is very tempting. But Well, what we see here in Congressman King's legislation is really slash and burn, scorched earth mentality in terms of immigration reform. It's digressive. It's not forward-looking. And deep, deep down inside, there's probably this little touch of racism going on here. And that is really sad because that's not, I think, the momentum of Iowa, nor is it the momentum of the country. And so if you want to be regressive and exclusive then, or exclusionary, then I think that's the bill. The other thing I was going to say is that, you know, this whole term of anchor babies, well, the last time that I looked at statistics for the population in Iowa, the population in Iowa is very, very on the move, very much on the move. I mean, it's changing. The complexion of Iowa is changing. The median age, I think, in Iowa is up in the 60s. And when you use terms like anchor baby, the last time I looked at Iowans who were 60 and 65 years old and very white, they're not having children. Who has children? People who are young have children. What does the immigrant population look like? It's a young population, so it's all logistics. And so, you know, to me, it's very sad that someone from Iowa is proposing this type of legislation. But I think, as we heard from one of the callers up with the diversity group up in his district, I think there is hope.
Okay. We regularly have Congressman King on the show, and we'll perhaps leave that topic and let him explain that at a future point on this program.
Sure.
Let's go to Shaza in North Liberty. Shaza, I hope I got your name right. Are you there, Shaza?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead. We have little time left. What do you want to chip into our conversation? Do you have an immigration experience?
Yes, I've been in this country for 5 years. I moved here after I got married. I am currently on an H-4 visa. I have two kids who are American citizens, but I am Pakistani by birth, although I do have a British passport, which I've been using to come into the country and travel back home. But my husband has not left the country for 11 years. He hasn't seen his grandmother for 11 years. He came here as a student, and we recently moved to Iowa from Illinois. And we're just waiting for the immigration reform to kick in because I am tired of waiting.
You think that the immigration reform will be an answer to a remedy to a lot of problems?
Yes. I want to work. I have an MBA. I was working when I was living in Pakistan, but here I can't work because of my visa. And my husband works at ATT. It's a very good company, but I've chosen to stay at home with my kids. Mm-hmm. But and they're young right now, so that's the choice I've made for now. But in the future, I do want to start working and contribute to my family income.
So is it the unclear status that people have right now without immigration reform, simply some kind of path that the government says to become a legal citizen? Is that what you're asking for, Shaza?
Yes. I mean, we've been in line for a green card for the past 5 years, but our date has not been current for the past 5 years. The category we're in, it's an EB3 category, and looks like now the dates are moving forward pretty fast. So I'm hopeful that this year we will get our green card.
Okay, Shaza, thank you for calling from North Liberty. Before we have to go, I wanted to give a minute to you, Father Rudolph Juarez, because I know worker justice is an area of your concerns, concerns immigrants here. We have very little time, but perhaps you can lay out what it is that concerns you about worker justice as immigrants.
Well, basically, the Sanctuary City Committee was formed to address some of the needs of immigrants in the community. And out of that came a discussion regarding and more involvement of the immigrant community itself. And so came the Immigrant Voices Project. After the Immigrant Voices Project started and got its own feet, then the question was turned to, well, what are some of the real deep concerns that the immigrant community has? And that is work and work environment, safety, housing, transportation, all these different connected issues. And out of that discussion came the desire to establish a place, or at least a group of people who were concerned with wage theft, people who were concerned with the work environment and quality of life in the area. And so that's where the Eastern Iowa Worker Justice Center came into play.
Okay. It sounds like that's a whole topic for another hour of conversation. We'll
exactly,
have to have you
right.
back, Father Rudolph Juarez. So many concerns and topics. I want to thank you, Pastor of St. Patrick's Church in Iowa City, for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Also, thanks to Irund Awan from a Congolese American man for joining us in Iowa City, and Fanayi Galicia, originally from Mexico, two members of the Immigrant Voices Project, and also Sandra Sanchez and Barb Dinnan. So much to talk about. We'll have to delve into some of these things in more detail later on. Thank you, Sandra and Barb, too.
Thank you.
River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury and Sarah Bowden. Production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.